Thank you. Be seated. Court is ready to hear argument for petitioner in Continental Casualty versus Downs.
May it please the court. Should Section 409.021 be interpreted to make an otherwise non-compensable claim compensable based on technicality? Technicality that doesn't exist in the statute, technicality that doesn't exist in the rules created to interpret the statute, a technicality that must be created by opinion of the court.
What's the administrative penalty if it's not complied with?
$5,000, up to $5,000 per day. And that's every day for each day of the violation.
Up to 7 days?
No, Your Honor. It's $5,000 per day until payment is made as required under the Act. So, for example, if there's 40 to 50 days of payments, it could be 5,000 times 50.
But what does that mean, that if you get past the 7-day period and there's no notice of refusal to pay benefits and no benefits paid, it gets to be 40 days out, and at that point in time the carrier determines to contest compensability, then what happens then? Do they have to start paying benefits until compensability is actually adjudicated? Do they just get to go on without paying benefits? Does it stop then the running of the administrative fine period? I'm trying to figure out how it works.
All right. Section 409.021 contemplates two parts.
Okay.
One part deals with when you initiate payment of benefits. The other part deals with when you must initiate the time period for evaluating compensability and disputing compensability. Part A, we believe, deals with initiating benefits. It requires us to initiate benefits within 7 days of the date that benefits accrue.
Or it requires you to give notice that you're refusing to pay.
That's correct. If we don't dispute,
okay,
we have to pay.
All right, but what if you don't do either one?
If we don't do either one for a period of 60 days,
mm-hmm,
then we've waived the right to dispute. We must dispute within 60 days,
okay,
or we hold the claim.
But tell me how that works with the administrative violation provision in Part E.
All right.
That's what I'm having a hard time with.
Very well. The administrative violation provision and the adjudication of administrative violations is under Section 415 of the Texas Labor Code. Section 415 allows the commission to come in and audit a file. The purpose is for them to determine whether we complied with payment requirements, and if we haven't complied, to assess appropriate penalties for the failure to comply. They can do an evaluation at any time.
Well, I understand, but I just want to know how you say that the legislature has already built in a consequence for failing to comply with Part A.
Correct.
And the consequence is that you are subject to being fined for an administrative violation for each day of the violation.
Correct.
I can't figure out, and I would appreciate your help, is how that works. If you fail to either pay or notify that you're refusing to pay under A,
correct,
and time just keeps running, and it's some time before the 60 days where you would lose the right to waive challenge compensability, is the fine going to run automatically through that whole 60-day time period?
Well, the commission has discretion when they evaluate as to how to set the fine. They can set it at zero. They can set it at $5,000 per day, depending on the severity of the violation.
Did your carrier get fined in this case for failing to comply?
The record doesn't reflect whether...
Did you?
I don't know the answer to that.
Well, you contested like on the 48th day, something like that, is that
That's
right?
That's correct.
Well, is the usual procedure then to run the fine from the 7th day to the 48th day, or does it run...
Again, that depends on the circumstances of the case.
So we don't really know then that the fine really will work to make sure that the carriers comport with the requirements of Part A. We're not sure.
What we know is that the commission has issued fines just during this year to carriers.
But you're saying that there may be no fine at all, right?
In this case. It's,
well, no, but I'm talking about the commission has discretion not to fine if they decide for some reason that no fine ought to be issued.
I believe that's correct, and I believe that complies with due process requirement.
But even if there's been a technical violation of that provision?
That's correct.
Okay, now let me ask you another question about how this works. Under your interpretation of the statute, since you say that there's no waiver if a carrier fails to meet the requirements of Part A, that means that we've got someone who is a beneficiary who is not getting paid and doesn't have notice of refusal.
Perhaps not.
Well, no, I'm saying, let's say, like in this case, a total absence. There was no compliance with A. You didn't send notice within 7 days, and you didn't start paying benefits.
Okay.
Because that's what happened in this case, isn't it?
It was not disputed within 7 days, and
there was
based
no
on the
refusal.
Record, there was no initiation of benefits.
Okay. All right. So if that ends up happening, and then the carrier decides on the 45th day, and there's not a requirement that they give notice of refusal, but just that they're going to actually contest compensability at that point in time. Do they have to start paying benefits then?
If the carrier, the way that procedure works is if the carrier doesn't pay benefits from day 0 to 45 and disputes on 45, under the commission's interpretation, the carrier has to pay benefits for that 45-day time period from the time that benefits accrued up until the time of the dispute.
Okay, so in what provision of the statute would we look to show that, in fact, they would be required to pay for those 45 days?
That would be not only Section 409.021, but the rules interpreting the statute.
Okay. Then my next question is to understand how this works so that we can get into your... I'm sorry, I apologize for getting you off track, but this helps me a lot. What if a carrier begins paying benefits under A1 within 7 days and then decides on the 45th day to contest compensability? Can they stop paying benefits at that point in time, having contested compensability?
Yes.
Okay. And then there's no requirement at that point in time that they give the notice that's required under A.
They must. They have
and
to.
And is that in the rules? It's not in the statute?
It's under the statute. We believe Section 409.021B says whether it's within 7 days or any time. When you decide to stop benefits, you have to give notice of your refusal to pay.
Well, but A would only require you to do it not later than the 7th day.
Right.
Is there something in the rules someplace that would require a similar notice to be given under C?
Yes. The rules require us to give notice of the initiation of benefits, actually when we initiate and start paying, and it also requires us to give an initiation of termination. And when we terminate, we're required to state the reason for termination. In other words, they're no longer entitled to benefits.
In order to know how this statute works, then we really have to study the rules that go with it, because there's a whole lot more in the process that's working here.
Without question.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm not sure I was clear. Continental Casualty, in this case, will have to pay whatever that period of time between that 7th day and the date it filed the contest here. Is that what you're saying?
Perhaps that's right. The claim was...
I mean, is it a matter of whether ultimately it's determined that they don't owe any compensation? They'll still have to pay for that some 40 days.
That hasn't been adjudicated, but I believe the commission rules, as they're written, require you to pay from the day the claim is filed to the extent benefits have accrued. There may be that no benefits have accrued, and in this case, the record is silent as to whether she actually provided all of the information necessary for benefits to begin accruing.
But if you say this is not a compensable injury, that's not the same thing as saying benefits accrued.
If you say this is not a compensable injury, you're saying that there is no entitlement to benefits.
Okay, I'm still confused.
All right.
You did not deny the claim within 7 days.
Correct.
You did not start paying the benefits within 7 days.
Correct.
You did not file your contest to compensability until toward the end of the second month, right?
Until 48 days.
48 days. I thought I understood you to say in answer to the question that how the administrative process works is because you did not deny it by that 7th day, you will have to pay the benefits up to that 48th day until you filed that deal.
If they've actually accrued.
But, and you say accrued, now I'm talking about whether she provided the paperwork or anything.
No, because under most under death claim, the benefits don't accrue until the claim is filed and documentation relating to it are provided. Now, if they have accrued and there's an obligation to pay, and we actually accept the claim, we do go back and recapture it.
Well, no, you owe it anyway. I mean, this is what I'm not understanding. If you don't deny it in 7 days, and you are ultimately ruled to have to pay it, I would assume you'd have to pay it from the date the claim was payable.
Correct.
So that's not an administrative enforcement of the failure to deny. That's just the results of the merits of the case you owe all that time.
Correct.
So then I did misunderstand your answer in saying that you would be responsible for benefits if you failed to deny it in that seventh day up to the point in time that you contested. You don't have to pay any benefits, even if you don't deny it within 7 days, if you ultimately win on the merits.
I don't know if that's correct, Your Honor. It's not clear. The rules as they're enacted currently require the carrier to pay benefits until the dispute is filed. They have accrued after day 8.
So you still have to, even if you dispute on the 48th day, at that point in time you're going to have to write a check for the previous 40-whatever days.
Under the current rules, that's correct.
Okay. But let me ask you, do you agree that the legislature intended with Provision A for benefits to start as soon as possible to a claimant?
Without question.
Then what incentive would a carrier ever have to comply with Part A if, in fact, they can just wait, make their determination later, and decide whether or not to grant to and therefore avoid Section 022, which seems to me to be the hammer over the carrier's head to say, you know, you want to refuse benefits early, then you're going to get stuck with the reason you give. You want more time to investigate, then start paying benefits. What incentive would a carrier have to ever begin paying benefits immediately? When the legislature seemingly intended that to happen. Doesn't help the claimant very much if someone has to wait till the 48th day and then get back payments.
Well, the incentive is that if the carrier doesn't do that, the amount of benefits is $467 a week. If they don't do that, you're looking at exposure of $5,000 per day.
Maybe.
And of course, you have to comply with due process. You have to see if there was a violation that warrants that type of sanction.
So,
the waiver provides no due process. It's a draconian penalty that has no obligation or no response as to why or the reason delay may occur.
But if you do refuse to pay within the 7 days, then you're limited to those grounds of refusal and later stages of the case and appeal. Isn't that correct?
That is the way the commission has interpreted this. I don't know if that is correct interpretation.
Isn't that the law? Isn't that the way appellate courts have decided this issue?
Specifically on that point, no, it hasn't been decided. We believe that Section 409.022 is referable to Part D, and that is that you have 60 days to evaluate whether a claim is compensable or not. You have a duty to make a good faith investigation under Article 21.
So it's your contention. If you refuse to pay and you state the grounds within those 7 days, that you're not limited to those grounds later on. You're saying that.
You have to state the grounds within 60 days, and that's the limitation period.
So the portion that says you must do it within 7 days is just void.
There is no portion that says. You mean Part A, Your Honor?
Let me get to that. I have it highlighted somewhere.
Which provision is this? 409.021 Part A, which says you must do it within 7 days. You must pay or dispute within 7 days. The penalty provision.
I'm talking about 409.022. The grounds for the refusal specified in the notice within that 7 days, I assume, constitute the only basis for the insurance carrier's defense on the issue of compensability in a subsequent proceeding.
I agree, but it doesn't say the initial or the first. It says the grounds for dispute, and Section C gives you 60 days to evaluate your grounds for dispute. And then Section D talks about, and you have to read it with Section D, that says that an insurance carrier may reopen the issue of compensability.
The 409.022 is talking about the notice of refusal to pay benefits.
Correct.
Which is the procedure that's in Part A. And isn't it true that the courts of appeals in the state have then interpreted 409.022 to, in fact, apply to that initial refusal, not a later determination by a carrier to deny compensability after agreeing to pay benefits?
The appeals panel certainly has.
Let me ask you one quick question before you sit down. Is it correct that you have urged your position to the legislature in light of the Court of Appeals opinion in this case, and they declined to amend the statute to interpret it?
The legislature, it passed, the amendment passed the initial committee hearings, but did not make it out of calendaring. I don't know if that's declined. The legislature did reject it. It never made it to the floor.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court. My name is Brad McClellan. Here's the amicus
representative. Would you tell us what the committee? Would you tell us how the commission enforces provision A using the fines and administrative violation procedures, and what the usual practice is of the commission on that?
The commission has discretion, and they can go after that compliance and practices, which is usually, admittedly, a drawn-out process at times. It has to be investigated, and then it goes through the commission's compliance and practice process. Now, I would represent to this court there are additional consequences for not paying.
Is the commission pursuing Continental Casualty in this case?
I have no knowledge of any fine being assessed against Continental
Casualty. How often does the commission actually assess fines for failure to comply with that? I'm just trying to understand if it's a meaningful consequence or not. Can you tell us?
I cannot tell you, but I can tell you they have the right to do it on everyone.
But you don't have any idea whether they're doing it or not.
I cannot tell you a number.
And what parameter would they look at if they did?
I can tell you the parameters they would look at would be the date. It's pure and simple, comes down to the date, and you would need to look at the sufficiency of the first notice of injury to make sure it was sufficient to start the clock running.
And presuming it was, they would say you didn't pay it, so we fine you.
Yes.
Which indicates that is a mandatory provision, that it was intended to be you must start paying or notify within the 7 days. I mean, don't those go hand in hand, the fact that a penalty can be imposed?
Yes.
Indicate that it's mandatory?
And the legislature, and we do not dispute that the 7 day payer dispute is mandatory. The whole problem comes down to the consequence, which goes back to, I think, originally the Hines versus Hash case with Justice Heck saying there wasn't a consequence provided in that case. And then Albertsons v. Sinclair, that this court decided, said the statute provided a consequence in some sections, but it didn't on the timely simultaneous filing. So we're not going to read in a consequence when the statute has provided consequences in other areas. I do disagree with the San Antonio court saying that there was only one consequence, being the administrative violation. A carrier is also subject to interest on any past due or accrued benefits, if any benefits are accrued. And insurance carrier also, under the labor code, a statutory, basically, bad faith provision exists under 416.002, which, if I think you can show a separate harm or injury because of the lack of timeliness by an adjuster or an insurance carrier, you could assert that. But this case really has to do with the express consequence provided under the statute, under 409.021, and the express right of it being 60 days that an insurance carrier has to dispute compensability. Separate and apart from the 7 days.
But no one is saying that they don't have 60 days. It's just that they also have an additional obligation under A to begin paying benefits if they want to take full advantage of the 60 days.
Well, that is the assertion by the respondent.
You don't take the position that they have to begin paying benefits?
There is no commission rule requiring that. I know there's one appellate court decision that says that's tied to the 7 days, 409.022. 409.022 does not tie expressly to the 7 days.
Let me ask you about that. A, 022A says the insurance carrier's notice of refusal to pay benefits under 021 must specify the grounds for refusal. And then B says the grounds for refusal specified constitute the only basis for the carrier's defense. Now, how is that not tied to the 7 day period?
And B ties it to the issue of compensability in a subsequent proceeding, unless the defense is based on newly discovered evidence. When you read it back with 409.021C, which says if an insurance carrier does not contest compensability of an injury on or before the 60th day after the date on which the insurance carrier is notified of the injury, the insurance carrier waives its right to contest compensability. not tied to 7 days, not tied to any other provision.
Well,
and then the second part of, I'm sorry, Jeff.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
The second part then says the initiation of payments by an insurance carrier does not affect the right of an insurance carrier to continue to investigate or deny the compensability of an injury during the 60-day period. By saying does not affect, they're not saying the initiation of payment then gives you another 53 days, which the legislature could have easily said if they wanted to. You have a 7-day right to pay or dispute and an additional 53 days
if
you do begin
payments. But we still have to go back to A as being mandatory.
Yes,
which means that, which seems to read that it does, and what the legislature intended was that benefits were going to be paid quickly to a claimant.
Yes.
Unless the carrier could make an early determination that they were prepared to stand by, that it was not a compensable claim.
And the commission strongly believes that is mandatory, but the issue.
So if it's mandatory, then how does your interpretation of the statute actually fulfill that intent by requiring carriers to begin paying benefits as soon as possible, unless they're absolutely sure that they should be denying, and in exchange for that, they get a full 60 days to be able to actually determine whether it's a compensable injury and will not have been deemed to have waived their right by having paid benefits during that time period?
And I don't believe the 7 days is tied to the 60-day, which is the position taken by the respondent. The 60-day stands alone by itself. Now, the commission strongly believes they should be.
I understand your position about the 60 days, but what I'm just saying is it seems to me to earn the privilege of the 60 days, you need to begin paying benefits early.
That is the whole
intention.
Isn't that
right?
Isn't that the intention of the statute?
All
yes.
Right. So how is that intention going to be fulfilled?
The commission itself could, and there's a provision under Chapter 410 to provide an expedited hearing. If you look back at the old law required 20 days to pay a dispute, but there was no ultimate waiver consequence. And then after 20 days, it was even 10 days more were added on for the Workers' Comp Commission, the IAB, to notify the insurance carrier, and then you set it for a pre-hearing. There is no ultimate consequence other than the commission could step in and say, we're setting a hearing on this tomorrow because someone comes forth and says, I'm in dire straits. I'm in need of essential medical treatment. An issue of compensability is in dispute. That's Chapter 410.025 of the Labor Code. It allows the commission to come in and immediately they could order a payment of benefits on an interlocutory basis subject to review through the dispute process. I know it's a hard thing, but it's basically like someone running a red light and you get a traffic ticket for that. That doesn't mean you lose your driver's license just because you ran the red light. Now, the Act does provide, if an insurance carrier continues to commit violations, they could lose their right to write workers' comp in Texas as an ultimate penalty under the administrative violations, and they are subject to the ongoing fines.
I want to make sure I understand Justice Hankinson's concern. In this scenario where there's not been a denial or a grant of the benefits, no notice has been given whatsoever, and let's take this away from the death benefits context. Let's talk just about an occupational injury. If you don't send any notice whatsoever, as I understand it, you can go get an interlocutory order or a benefit review conference, and the benefits are the timeliness of delivery of benefits is still going to be granted within that 60-day period, correct? Let me rephrase it. I think Justice Hankinson's concerned that the injured worker, in my scenario, is not going to get timely benefits.
An insurance carrier, to avoid the administrative violation, if they did realize they paid out of time, may pay the benefits that were due up until at least the time of their dispute. Under 409.024, it allows, I think, Justice Hankinson, Justice Chesterton was asking, where's the provision of statute to cut off benefits? 409.024 is another provision to cut off benefits once they've been initiated, and you have to notify 10 days after you've cut off benefits, which is hard to join those two statutes together.
Let me go back to my issue here. No notice was given whatsoever. How is the injured worker going to get – the injured worker is going to get benefits, correct, if no notice has been given whatsoever? That's what the commission's going to order. Correct?
Within the window, the
70-60-day
window?
Within the 70-60-day window.
The commission rules that have been adopted actually since the initial decision in this case, they were proposed before that. instruct the carrier to pay the accrued benefits, but they do not say that you've given up your right to contest compensability if you get that done within the 60 days, which is the ultimate hammer that the legislature put in the labor code, which never existed under the law preceding injuries before 1-1.
Well, let me make sure I understand this. In an injury case, is income benefits, temporary income benefits, TIBS, and medical going to be paid between that 7 to 60 day window?
I would say it would ultimately be up to the insurance carrier. The commission rule says you need to pay accrued benefits if you late dispute. The statute itself doesn't require that. It's not contained in the statutory language. The statutory language provides the consequence of the administrative violation, and the other sections provide the consequence of interest and then the possible bad faith for not timely doing something. The commission rules that have been adopted after the initial decision, but before the San Antonio court put in their second decision, pulling their first one, require an insurance carrier that disputes in that window to pay accrued benefits.
Well, so are you going to enforce the rule or not? Do you enforce the rule or not?
The commission's enforcing the rule.
Yeah.
The current rule.
The rule about paying benefits when you deny sometime or you contest sometime within 60 days?
And I believe that
rule's being routinely enforced.
Yes, and I believe most insurance carriers are actually paying the money to avoid, because that money is a lot less than they would face in the compliance and practice fine.
But we don't know whether or not they're actually assessing administrative fines.
And they have. I can't tell you.
The brief says in 2000, 2,590 violations of some rules, $2.3 million fines. Do you take issue with that?
No, that's how they get.
But you don't know for what
commission
kind of,
system
it could be any number of different kinds of violations.
No.
Any other questions? Thank you. The court is ready to hear arguments from respondent.
Mr. Bennett, how will you
May it please the court, your honors. My name is Kenneth W. Howell, and I represent the respondent in this appeal, Mary Ann Downs. I think in light of the questioning of the petitioner, I'd like to begin by going to this question about that Justice Hankinson had about how the administrative violations work or how they're enforced. And I can tell you the reason these guys can't tell you how it's enforced is because they never had enforcement. They never have paid it. They really don't know how it works. I would also like to address the fact of the current rules that say benefits are paid up to the time they accrue. The accrued benefits are paid to the time of denial. That rule was not enacted until after this case was decided by the Court of Appeals. They've probably been coming up with that rule since this case was decided. But it doesn't change the fact that it doesn't address the waiver issue. And in fact, if you read that rule the way it's written, there's not an administrative violation anymore either, which is also a statutory requirement.
I don't understand that. What do you mean there's not an administrative violation?
They don't have an administrative violation. They pay benefits up until the time they have been accrued.
But you're asking us to read in Section A, add the words, the carrier shall do this or else shall waive the right. And that language is no place in Part A. How are we to get over that hurdle to engraft that kind of a provision under the statute and the legislature didn't deem it necessary to include?
I think the way you get there, Judge, is not by, Your Honor, is not by looking at 409.02A or 21A only, but you also look at 409.022. And under 409.022, the notice of refusal has to specify all the grounds for refusal. In a case like this one, where they didn't file any notice, obviously they've asserted no grounds for refusal in the first 7 days.
What were the benefits claimed in this case?
What were the benefits claimed?
Uh-huh.
Death benefits, statutory death benefits.
What would those be in this case?
How much?
No, I mean, is it a payout or is it going to be a lump sum?
Generally, they're paid, they should start being paid on or before the first 7th day, and they're generally paid, I believe, on a weekly basis until the different conditions for their termination occur. Getting back to Justice Hankinson's question, I think you look at the language of 409.022, and this is where I think this language comes up about the waiver is kind of unfortunate. It's always been called a waiver under administrative appeals panel decisions, but really it's a waiver in effect, but it's not a waiver in the terms of a common law voluntary relinquishment. It happens under the express terms of 409.022. You didn't file a refusal in the first 7 days. No grounds are specified under that express language, then you cannot assert any grounds later on, absent newly discovered evidence. And this is an important part of the statute that wasn't an issue in this case, that I think the court needs to look at when weighing the arguments about the harshness of waiver and the harshness of the result of such a construction.
So you're saying the statute contemplates that you, even where you are entitled to take 60 days to determine compensability, and it's ultimately determined by everybody that it's not a compensable claim, the statute nevertheless contemplates that you pay death benefits for a non-compensable claim while you're investigating. You're saying that's what the statute contemplates.
I think the statute does contemplate
so that.
I said yes.
Regardless of whether, even in compensable cases, in almost every non-compensable case, you're going to have to pay some benefits. That's your interpretation of the statute.
I think, as the Court of Appeals said, if the carrier doubts the compensability or has questions about the compensability of the claim, yes, then the statute requires them to promptly initiate payments, and that gives them the 60-day window within which to continue their investigation and make whatever determinations of compensability they have to make.
If there's a later determination of non-compensability, is the carrier able to get those funds back through the subsequent injury fund or elsewhere, or is that just gone?
If they began the payments voluntarily, I don't believe so. I don't believe there would be any provision for getting the benefits back from the subsequent injury.
Even if there's an adjudication that there is no compensability whatsoever, conclusively established.
Well, now if there's a commission order or decision that it's not compensable, under that situation, then they can apply to the subsequent injury fund. But I mean, in that early, those early payments that are made, until they make their final decision, I don't think there's any way to recoup those. But that was what I think the legislature intended. I mean, if we go back to the very beginning of this 89 Act, as many members of this court are well aware, that was a very comprehensive reform of the workers' compensation system at that time. And part of the reform was aimed at eliminating or decreasing courts, decreasing access to courts, and decreasing attorney involvement, because these were all seen as factors that were driving up the cost of claims.
It seems to me there's some logic to, under the comp scheme, to require the insurance company take the burden of paying preliminary benefits to an injured person while they're investigating whether or not the claim is compensable. It seems to me there's some logic to that process. But I don't know if the legislature truly believed that within the course of 7 days an insurance company would have the resources necessary to investigate a claim to the point that it could conclude what its proper defenses would be for not paying the claim, and then give them another 53 days to investigate to find out whether or not they have any facts supporting that defense. I mean, in one sense, it looks like we realize it's going to take you a couple of months to learn enough about the case to make a decision, but you're going to have to say what the result of your decision is within the first 7 days. It seems to me there's not much sense to that interpretation.
Well, I think it is, and I think it's consistent with the purpose that I was getting to. What was intended by this act was to put a prompt, speedy, fair, administrative resolution in favor of access to the courts, or in place of access to the courts.
But isn't a reasonable interpretation that if you, insurance company, if you know a reason immediately, you've got to state it immediately. If you don't know a reason immediately, you're going to have to pay benefits, and we'll give you in 60 days to find what the reasons may be. But for that interim, you're going to have to pay benefits.
Correct. And I would point out two things. First, and I think some of the statistics that were cited by Continental in some of their briefs back this up, I think most cases there's probably not a question. The guy fell off a ladder at work and got hurt. There's not going to be any question in 7 days. The guy got run over by a crane. There's not going to be any question as to whether or not that was in the course and scope. Those types of benefits would be commenced immediately. Now, if there's other issues there that might require investigation, I think that's what the legislature requires. And it's really not, I mean, whether or not the legislature thought 7 days was a reasonable time or wasn't a reasonable time is really for the legislature.
Yeah, but all we're talking about here is the consequence. I mean, let's assume you're absolutely right that even for non-compensable claims, the legislature wants you to pay between the 7th day and up to the 60th day, even if it's non-compensable, and an insurance company doesn't. The only issue we're being asked to decide is what is the consequence? Is it total waiver of your ability to claim compensability, or is it an administrative fine plus the payments that were not made? Isn't that the only question we're being asked to decide?
I really think that should be the only question before this court, is what is the consequence of the failure to take one of those two actions in 7 days?
If it's a non-compensable claim,
administrative violation, or whether or not it's...
And if it's a non-compensable claim, isn't it a reasonable construction of the statute? What the legislature intended was you're liable for the payments you didn't make between day 7 and the time you ultimately denied as non-compensable, plus any administrative fines that the commission might in its discretion impose. Isn't that what the legislature intended its consequence to be rather than a waiver?
I don't necessarily agree that it is. I think the statute says what the statute says. Now, I guess that kind of gets to that point, and that is what the current rule that they've come up with, it works along those lines. But that was not the rule that was in effect at the time that this case was decided.
What would happen? I mean, you said that this rule that's been referenced about if you deny compensability, then you have to pay the back benefits that have accrued under this new rule that was enacted as a result of the decision in this case. Before that rule, what would happen? If the carrier decides, doesn't act within 7 days to do one or the other of the acts that are mentioned, decides to deny compensability or contest it on the 48th day, what happens then? Before the new rule happened?
All that happened under commission practice then was they were subject to a potential administrative violation.
So at that, nothing happened with respect to benefits then?
Correct.
Now,
correct.
What happens then and now, I don't know if it's any different, if the carrier begins to pay benefits within 7 days and decides on the 48th day to contest compensability, can they stop paying benefits at that point, or do they have to continue paying benefits until some sort of resolution is made during the dispute resolution process?
I think the way the statute's written, they could stop benefits at that point and notify the commission and the claimant. We've decided this is not a compensable claim for these reasons, and you can go ask for a benefit review conference. I think that's what the statute contemplates. What the statute contemplates is that a carrier does something quickly, and this gets back to this concern I was talking about, the 89 Act. One of the things that, when you look at the legislative history of that, there was a concern was that people, that claimants were going to seek attorneys and hiring attorneys right off the bat, when their claims were denied, because they couldn't get any communication from the carrier. They couldn't get any...
But the rules aside, doesn't the statute contemplate that you either pay or deny by the 7th day, and then you've got 60 days to decide whether you're going to deny compensability grants? If you deny for compensability reasons, you're going to still be liable for the failure to make payment plus administrative fines, or where do you glean from the statute that the additional penalty, in addition to having to pay the benefits for non-compensable injury and a fine, or you waive your compensability argument?
Let me make sure I'm understanding your question. I don't believe the statute doesn't say.
The statute wants prompt payment. And they're willing to, and the trade-off is you get 60 days to analyze compensability as long as you pay.
Right.
They don't pay, but the statute contemplates that they should have paid. So what isn't the reasonable intent of the statute that you're still on the hook for the payments between the seventh day and the date you ultimately denied based on compensability, plus the possible administrative fine? But where does the statute say, in addition to those penalties, if you will, you waived compensability, waived the ability to contest compensability?
Well, again, first of all, the statute.
They want prompt payment, but they don't. There's no intent here to prompt pay for ultimately for non-compensable claims indefinitely.
I think this gets back to the express wording of 409.022. That is, if you didn't specify a ground for refusal in the first 7 days,
you can't start paying. You're supposed to start paying. You don't.
Right.
And then you do ultimately specify the grounds as contemplated in B. Within the 60-day period, you've still got 60 days to specify grounds.
If you initiate payments in the first 7 days, but under 409.022, if you refuse, you are limited to those grounds in that first filed notice of refusal. In other words, you don't have 60 days to investigate if you refuse in the first 7 days.
Under 022, though, your opponent says there's nothing that says that where you have to specify the grounds has to be within that 7 days. They say could it as easily apply to the 60 days.
I disagree. I think that the plain wording of the statute.
Where does it say 7 days in 022?
That the notice we filed, the notice required to be filed under 409.021A, which would be the requirement that the notice be filed within 7 days.
It says 409.021. It doesn't say.
I mean 409.021.
It doesn't say A, and 021 also has a 60 day in C.
But 409.021A talks about a notice of refusal or initiation of compensation. I think when you look at 409.022, it refers to the notice required to be filed.
But then,
by 409.021.
I'm really just trying to understand. 409.021C doesn't say notice, but it talks about notification of the injury. Same thing with notice.
Well, I mean, whether it's notice or notification, I don't.
I'm just trying to see how we can decide that 409.022 only has to do with the 7-day notice period rather than having application to the 60-day notification period. Why do we have to say that 022A only talks about the 7-day period and not the 60-day period?
Because I think on its face, that's what it says. It says you've got to file your notice of refusal with, and it's got to specify the grounds, and it's got to be filed within 7 days.
But there's a period where you can refuse up to the 60th day, right?
If you initiated payments or began compensation in the first 7 days, that's our position.
Okay, so you have to, in order to take advantage of that, you have to have initiated compensation within the first 7 days.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. That's the way I think the statute reads.
Do you agree that the commission interprets the rule the way the insurance carrier wants it to be applied?
Yes, I do, Your Honor. I do agree with that.
But it was your point the commission's rule came out after this case was decided, or not? Did I misunderstand that?
The rules that they're talking about now, the accrual of benefits, weren't enacted until March 2000. And the original opinion in this case came out in January.
But they interpret the statute the same way. They're not relying on rules. They're relying on the statute, are they not? The commission says the statute says what the petitioner in this case says the statute says.
Under the current rules.
Forget the rules. They interpret the statute the same way as the petitioner does, do they not?
Yes. The commission has interpreted the statute, yes, the same way that the petitioner has and that the commission has.
Should we give that some deference? You argue that the statute is plain in its terms, but should we give the commission some deference in their understanding of that statute?
Well, I think the law is settled that an administrative construction is entitled to some weight, and it can be given some deference, but the court makes that inquiry on its own. And if the, in fact, I think the court recently addressed the weight to be given an administrative decision in the case of NRA American Homestar Manufactured Homes. If it's not a permissible construction of the statute, the court does not defer to that construction. And the San Antonio Court of Appeals, I believe, correctly held that their construction is not a permissible construction of the statute. Under the construction that Continental and the Commission are urging, you might as well just eliminate 409.022 from the labor code because it is meaningless. And it's not, two statutes together cannot be read.
This is what I'm having a hard time understanding. How is it meaningless when you still have to, if you don't specify your grounds for within 60 days, whatever grounds you specify, you're limited to. Plus, you have to pay, if you didn't start paying on the seventh day, you're still liable from the day, the seventh day, through the day that you denied basis on compensability. Plus, you're subject to administrative penalties. Now, how is that not carrying out the intent of the statute, and how is that letting interest come to get away with it?
Well, because, and I think as you saw Mr. McClellan from the commission, it's never been enforced. That administrative violation has never been enforced.
Is there any evidence in the record about that?
There's no evidence one way or another, but I think it can be fairly implied from the fact that there's numerous appeals panel decisions that this issue has come up and the appeals panels has come up with the interpretation that the commission has. I can answer the question as to whether or not this carrier has been suffered any administrative violations. It has not. It has not been assessed any violations. I'm not aware in doing 9 years of workers' comp practice of any carrier ever being assessed an administrative violation under these circumstances, even after this decision is decided.
If you don't specify your grounds for within 60 days, whatever grounds you specify, you're limited to. Plus, you have to pay, if you didn't start paying on the seventh day, you're still liable from the day, the seventh day, through the day that you denied basis on compensability. Plus, you're subject to administrative penalties. Now, how is that not carrying out the intent of the statute, and how is that letting interest come to get away with it?
Well, because, and I think as you saw Mr. McClellan from the commission, it's never been enforced. That administrative violation has never been enforced.
Is there any evidence in the record about that?
There's no evidence one way or another, but I think it can be fairly implied from the fact that there's numerous appeals panel decisions that this issue has come up and the appeals panels has come up with the interpretation that the commission has. I can answer the question as to whether or not this carrier has been suffered any administrative violations. It has not. It has not been assessed any violations. I'm not aware in doing 9 years of workers' comp practice of any carrier ever being assessed an administrative violation under these circumstances. Even after this decision is decided, people come in our office every other day. They haven't heard anything for months, and it's still hard to get a hold of them even after they're contacted by the attorney. The administrative violation provision simply has not been enforced, and I'd just also like to add that the fact that it's included doesn't necessarily mean that waiver is not also an issue, or that waiver can also be a penalty. I mean, even after 60 days, everyone agrees there's waiver, and there presumably would be an administrative violation, too. Whether or not that's in 7 or 60 days is...
Just one other question. Did the carrier pay, in this case, between the 7th day and the 48th day?
The carrier has never paid a dime, and until this new rule, that was never the practice. And again, in my experience, even since this new rule, I still don't see it applied in that manner.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Section 409.021 makes it clear that administrative penalty is the penalty for violating Part A. Whether that's a sufficient penalty or not is not for the courts to decide. That's the legislative position, and the court shouldn't second guess the legislature as to whether that's sufficient or not. The real question this court has to decide is, should we read in the term waiver to Part A when it's not there?
Would you? I think that I heard Mr. Howell say something a little bit different, that perhaps waiver's too strong a word, and as I understood in response to our questions, he looks to 409.022 and says that because it addresses the notice of refusal to pay benefits, which is the term used only in A of 021, not any place else, that B of 409.022 provides the limitation on why you can't raise grounds for denying compensability after the 7 days if you have failed to initiate the payment of benefits. Now, that's what I understand is how he's having his interpretation. Would you respond to that argument?
I would. Okay. What you would have to, what even reading that, you'd have to read 409.022 to say that if the carrier has not filed the contribution within 7 days and has not initiated benefits within 7 days, then they can never file a contribution.
Well, what he's saying is that if you don't initiate benefits, then we presume under A you must have done a notice of refusal to pay, and 409.022 requires that you put the grounds in there. So it's almost like this phantom notice of refusal, this kind of illusory thing that never happened, and because there's no ground, you can't rely on it.
Right, and what they're
basically, he says, if we don't do that, we read 409.022 out of the statute.
And I don't believe that's correct.
Okay.
I don't believe that's correct. First, because 409.022 can as easily and as clearly be tied to Part C and D. And in fact,
but C doesn't mean, and I want you to help me with this, because this, to me, is the crux of his argument. But C in no place talks about giving a notice of refusal to pay benefits, which is exactly the terminology used in A. In fact, C just talks in terms of allowing a carrier to contest compensability. So he ties 409.022 to A because of the term of art, notice of refusal to pay benefits. See what I mean?
I do.
I think that's what he means.
A refusal to pay benefits must be tied to a contest of compensability. You're saying that the claim is not compensable and therefore you're refusing to pay benefits.
I know, but what I think he's saying is that the use of the words notice of refusal to pay benefits is a particular term of art, means a particular document. It's that 7-day document.
Right. Part B of Section 409.022 is almost verbatim out of the second sentence of, out of Section 409.021D. It says, unless defense is based on newly discovered evidence. This, again, B says an insurance carrier may reopen liability only if it's based on newly discovered evidence. And that is clearly tied to Part C, not Part A. And so, therefore, that is why we come up with this.
Wait, say that again. I'm sorry. I want to understand this. Say that again.
409.022B, okay. Second half, says that the carrier can only, if the notice amendment has to be based on newly discovered evidence. 409.021D talks about reopening the dispute of compensability, and again, it states based on newly discovered evidence. That's clearly tied to Part C, not Part A.
Well,
409.021.
Where does Part C deal with the notice?
Part C talks about the carriers stating the basis for their denial of compensability. If an insurance carrier does not contest the compensability of the injury on or before the 60th day, the first sentence deals with the carrier's contest of compensability. That contest of compensability is done pursuant to following a TWCC 21, the notice of refusal to pay a claim. They're one and the same thing. So the documents that they're referring to are one and the same documents.
But we have to go to the rules to find that? We don't find
it
in the statute.
I don't see it from the statute.
That's correct. And the reason.
And what rule is that?
I think it's cited as 124.3. It's cited in 3.
But that's notice of the injury. and not notice of the ground. And this says notified of the injury. And 409.022 talks about the grounds for the refusal in the notice.
That's correct, but your contest of compensability is the grounds for your refusal. That when you're refusing benefits, you're saying...
No, I understand that. I just don't see that the same notice provision that you're talking about in C that 022 seems to contemplate. But we're going to have to find that somewhere in the rules.
In the rules and the statute. And with regard to consistent interpretation by the commission has been interpreting this since 1992 consistently with a waiver, and it has been applying it for 8 years.
Any other questions? Thank you. That concludes the arguments of today's causes. Mark will now adjourn the court.
All rise.
Oye,
oye, oye. The Honorable.